Well, hello, and welcome to the next episode of The Teller. Sense of the dramatic there, perhaps. I'm doing this story actually sitting quietly in Durham Cathedral, just on the grounds and outsides of Durham Cathedral, been wandering around. Do these podcasts on the go, so to speak. The story today is going to be a tale of a giant. Giants, of course. Giants appear in all kinds of stories, don't they? Giants are a staple of storyteller life. I mean, what have we got? Jack and the Giant and the Giant Killer and all tales like this. Giants, oh my. I remember going to Penrith Churchyard, actually, where there's the Giant's grave as a child, and looking at this huge grave from goodness only knows when, Anglo-Saxon times or something, marked out, and the giant would have strodden over the land and caused all kinds of problems, I suppose. And yet, really, you know, giants are normally such kindly people. If you ever meet a giant, giants are kind of gentle. It's a gentle giant. But of course, now and again, occasionally, I would have to say, you do meet a giant with no heart. And this tale of mine today is the giant who had no heart. Let's face it, a giant with no heart would be able to shake a man. He'd be able to lift him up. And in his place, instead of a heart, you would find a wasp's nest and put your ear to his chest. And you would find no kindness, only an angry buzzing instead. Why, a heartless giant could crack a skull of a man with a fist like a walnut. And often, the heartless giant did. But, of course, you see, eventually all things come to all, and eventually the king of the land that the heartless giant lived in captured him. This king was good, and this king was kind. And he locked the giant in a huge giant cell. And there that giant had to sit, with just a little tiny, tiny window in which he could see the outside world. The damp would drip from his walls, and the rattle of his chains was the only sound. But in the king's castle, the angry growl and grumble of the giant would echo at night through the stone. But the people were safe. Oh, yes. And years passed in this way, until the giant's voice was little more than a whisper, and the people of the countryside had forgotten about giants with no hearts. And in fact, I would say he would have still been there if it hadn't have been for the king's youngest son, a little boy called Leo. Now, Leo was a natural investigator, a true adventurer. He had two older brothers who were not like him at all. But this little Leo, why, he could leave no stone unturned, no passage unexplored, no drawer unrummaged. He was a boy of insatiable curiosity. Now, one day, in the deepest, darkest remiss of the castle, what should he find? But he found a tiny barred window in the bottom of a huge grey wall. And looking through it, Leo could see nothing at all but dark, dank, pitch black. But then as he turned away, he imagined he heard something stir, and then came a growl and a low buzz, It was a truly terrifying sound. Now his brothers had told him, and the rumours had got to him, that there was a giant with no heart who lived in a prison with a tiny window, but he hadn't believed them. They were older, his brothers, and they would forever tease him. But the next day he went back and carried his drum. Rat-a-tat-tat he played outside that window. And then from inside that dark, dank, pitch black, he heard a rattle, the rattle of a chain. He crept to the window, he looked in the shadows, and there two yellow eyes the size of saucers blinked back at him. Leo jumped, and a wasp buzzed angrily through the bars. Leo ran off. It was true. There was a giant. All night, Leo thought about this giant, with his yellow eyes and the rumbling growl. And next morning he was back, rat-a-tat-tat, rat-a-tat-tat, on his little drum. The giant was waiting for him. When Leo tiptoed up to the window, he was there and whispered hello. The giant told Leo that long ago he had done some bad things, and the king had locked him up. Now, Leo couldn't imagine what those bad things were, and he worried about that poor giant who was stuck down there in terrible chains. He lit a candle and he held it to the hole. The giant was so big, he had to crouch with his chin on his knees and his elbows were bent. He looked to Leo like a huge, sad baby. Those yellow eyes screwed up against the candle's sudden glare. Leo said that he would speak to his father. It wasn't fair the giant had been locked up for so long. He must be forgiven. And he was probably forgotten. No, croaked the giant, all anxious. If you say anything, they'll make me stay down here forever and I shall surely perish. The yellow eyes blinked nearer. Would you like to be my friend? Leo, little Leo, he was elated. Oh, yes, yes, please. Good, good, said the giant. Good, thought Leo. I will have a secret friend. Good, thought the giant, who had lost his heart. At last, and he sighed a chill sigh, he planned chill plans. And while the young prince skipped back along the path, swinging the iron gate behind him, caressing his secret, he nurtured it back to his room. And so it began, that friendship between this huge, crouching, imprisoned giant and the little prince. Every day the boy would appear, rat-tat-tatting on his drum, and every day he'd tell a little bit more and hear a little bit more until he felt he knew nobody better and nobody knew him better. Oh, he wanted to tell the whole world about his friend. But the giant said,
our secret.
And Leo agreed, although he would have loved to have told his mother, or his two brothers, or somebody. But he couldn't, so he shouldn't, so he wouldn't. Oh, so he didn't. The giant, of course, crouched in his blackness, and he schemed. And so it was that one day he told Leo that he'd heard a guard saying that the king slept with the keys to the giant's chains hanging on a ring by his bed. Leo had always thought the keys were for the jewels of the king.
No, said the giant, they're for my pain, they're for my misery. Leo felt desperate for his misunderstood friend.
And he formed a plan in his mind, and the giant watched it being born, and he sighed a cold sigh, and deep inside, in the place where his heart should have been, the wasps, they seethed and they buzzed. And that very night, when the whole castle was sleeping, and when the royal guard slumped against their sentry posts and they dozed, and when the owls hooted, little, little Leo, he slipped from his bed, he slid past a sleeping sentry, and he pushed on the door of his parents' room, and he tiptoed round the great bed, past his sleeping mother, past his sleeping father.
Onto the velvet eiderdown, onto the hook where the keys were hung.
They were so heavy, but he heaved them up, and they swung together, clanging like the Angelus bell itself. Leo clutched them tight, their metal teeth squashing his toes, their hooped handles framing his face. And slowly, slowly, inch by inch, he dragged those huge keys from the room. "I've got the keys," he whispered. Trembling at the little window, he let them ring against the bars.
"Who goes there?"
challenged a voice from the darkness. It was the one sentry who was still awake.
"Hurry!
Hurry!" growled the giant from the bowels of the dungeon. Leo struggled to push the keys through the bars. The teeth went in and the long shafts, but when it came to the ring, he just couldn't work out how to do it. "They're too big," he explained as he heard the giant snort of impatience. "I can't do it." Leo wanted to drop the keys and just run for his life. "Push them," hissed the giant. "Push them."
The giant's voice was colder than the night. It was icy, and Leo pushed. A great hand yanked on the keys, and Leo saw its shape in the shadows, and he felt a terrible force pulling downwards.
"Who goes there?"
demanded the approaching voice. And then, with a sudden wrench, the keys had disappeared, pulling the bars with them into the blackness.
"Who goes there?"
demanded the approaching voice again. But then Leo heard a sigh, a horrible aching sigh. The turning of the locks and the crashing of the doors.
"Oh, don't forget to let me have them back," he said, staring blankly into the dungeon.
He shivered again. The sentry's torch was almost upon him, and suddenly the silence was rent with cries. A man screamed, and there was a sound of a crunching like a great walnut cracking, then a broken throaty roar. And from the far corner, a door burst from its hinges, spilling light onto Leo's face. The giant appeared, first his head squeezing at the entrance, pulling away the bricks and the lentils, and then his shoulders squeezing, straining through. It was like a giant baby being born into the night. Leo watched, horrified. The giant glanced at Leo, but only for a second. And then he emerged from the entrance, first one, and then a second sentry confronted him, challenging him with sword and spear. But the giant just hoisted them up, one in each fist, and cracked their heads together, and then just tossed them away. Then, with the sound of groans and cries, he proclaiming that release, the guard sounded the alarm, but the heartless giant turned and limped off, roaring his broken roar. All night, Leo sat shivering on the battlements. The king and his men searched the grounds of the castle. His father's angry words haunted him.
"Someone has betrayed us. Why, only a madman would help a giant with no heart. Someone has betrayed us."
Leo's face swam with tears. So let down, he felt. So stupid, so guilty. Every scream was his fault. Every cracked skull, and when finally morning came, the boy in him, the innocent heart, the joy in him, they were gone. Those things, like his friend, would never return.
So this is bad. And next morning, when Leo looked down, who should he see but his elder brother, who he always idolized, march across that courtyard, carrying a sword and an axe and a bow, and a large saddleback yanked up onto his shoulder.
"Where are you going?" Leo called down.
"Shh," warned his brother. "I am going to get the giant back."
Leo felt awful. "Have you told anybody?"
His eldest brother shook his head proudly. "No, of course not, but I must go. Father is too old. I am the eldest prince." With this, he offered up his hand in salute, and he turned, a young, proud warrior prince, off to find the giant.
I'm sorry, wept his brother. But nobody heard little Leo, and his oldest brother never came back. The spring came and went, and sadness was within the world. Every day, story after story reached the castle of this giant's cruel rampage. And soon it was that one glum morning, perched up on the ledge of his window, Leo looked down and saw his other brother walking through that courtyard with a golden helmet on his head and a shield sparkling.
"Where are you going?" Leo called out.
"To find our brother, to kill the giant."
Leo was beside himself. "Please, please don't. It's madness. He has no heart."
But his brother shook his head. "I must go. Our father's too old. Someone must protect the people."
Leo could not stand it. "He'll trick you. He'll trick you," he blurted out. "He'll trick you."
But his brother would not listen. He raised his hand in salute and he set off to find the giant.
Terrible, wretched, Leo felt, and he watched him go.
And that brother did not return either.
That summer the year was short. The winter was wild and seemingly went on forever. One day, Leo heard his mother cry from far off and came into her bedroom and found her kneeling, head against the green velvet of the eiderdown.
"Mum?"
The queen did not look up.
"Your dad says that he's going to go off and fight the giant. He's too old. I've lost two of my boys already. He's too old, he's too ill."
She cried and she cried. She wanted Leo to promise he would never, ever go and follow his brothers.
"Promise me, promise me, promise me you won't ever go."
But he couldn't promise, could he? How could he promise? If it wasn't for him, the heartless giant would still be chained, still locked, still safe in that dungeon. The next morning at the crack of dawn, dressed in a little thick leather jerkin, Leo rode into the royal stables, carrying with him saddlebags stuffed with cheese and ham and biscuits, salted beef. But he carried no weapon of any kind. He approached the stall where his father's stallion stood, tall, scarred, imperious. He swung the saddle over the beast's back and led him from the stable.
The groom of the stables tried to stop, and noticing the young prince, he stepped back, and off they rode. They did not look back.
Horse and boy, breath steaming out before them, the path flashing by. On and on and on, and the young prince rode the land in search of his once friend, the heartless giant. 3 winters came and went, with a bitter shiver, but still he rode on determined. And many times were those saddlebags emptied and filled, and many nights slept achingly cold, huddled with his horse for warmth. And many days did he spend without sighting a single soul. The boy changed slowly into a young man, took his own counsel, set his jaw in resolve. His heart was firm, his plan was fixed. But surprisingly, to find this giant was no easy thing. The pillage of the giant had stripped the land bare. There were only bleached bones and spat out ruins and whispered nightmares remaining.
Where was the giant? Nobody knew. Long gone, the survivors would tell Leo as he bent from his horse's neck. Long gone.
And then we get to the day that he came to a place and he finally knew that he was on track to find the giant. He couldn't miss it. There's a stench of blood which curdled the air. There was a village abandoned, smouldering and smoking. The horse reared and bucked. It looked fearful. And looking down to the earth for clues, Leo saw a bird flap, helpless, a torn wing shuddering pitifully. The prince sat down and took up the bird in his hands.
"Caw, help me," it cried. "The giant broke me, and now I cannot fly. I cannot eat. Ah, help me."
So Leo sat and he tended the bird. He fixed its wing. He fed it bread
which he soaked in milk. And soon, all was well with it. Leo threw it high in the air and watched it soar. "Thank you," cried the bird from the heavens. "If you need me, I shan't forget." And with a caw, it flew off. And they followed. A little soon afterwards, Leo stopped at the brook. The horse and his rider were hungry, thirsty, sore, weary. And as they drank, they heard a flapping, and heard a thrashing, and heard a slapping, and looking round, Leo saw a salmon. It was twisting, frantic, beached in the crook of the small crevice. "Help me," cried the choking fish. "Help me back into the water. I'm stuck here, I'm stranded, I'm beached up, I'm landed. Help me."
And as much as a fish, of course, can talk. Now, Leo was famished, and he actually loved salmon over the taste of any fish. But this fish had suffered sufficiently, thought the prince. So he picked up the flailing fish, and he swung it gently into the stream, back to where the salmon is king. And off it flashed to the reeds and the green ripples, before reappearing in the middle of the water and slapped the surface with a little message. "Thanks. And if you need me, I shan't forget." And it plunged back into the brook, and it followed its zig and its dag down the stream to the lair of the giant. Now neither Leo nor his horse had eaten for days. They were famished and exhausted. Their progress had slowed to a weary jog and stumble. And then at last that old stallion sank slowly to his knees, rolled over, and died. Leo lay next to his faithful horse and shed his tears enough to break a heart, half from love, half from memories of his mum, his dad, in pain for his brothers and what he had done. And then he slept, dreaming he was in his mother's bed, warm, cherished, his mum hugging him, vivid. And he woke, hugging himself, only to find his dead horse behind him. And not his mother, but a giant wolf coiled around his body with terrible teeth glistening and a tongue hanging out in hunger. And seeing his eyes flicker, the wolf, he howled a terrible howl and fixed on Leo's bare and guarded throat. "Help!" cried the wolf. "I have not eaten since the winter came, but help me and I'll not forget you." Leo had no food except his own flesh. He took up his courage and he spoke to that wolf whose sour breath plated with his own. So near were they to each other's jaws. "How can I?" he replied. "I have no food myself." The wolf nudged the dead horse. "Then let me eat your horse," he panted, his tongue a vicious red swipe across his teeth. "I'll eat it and be strong again, and trust me, I may help you." The prince could not watch as that starving animal leapt upon the flesh of the stallion. In no time he'd eaten every scrap of flesh, chewed the bones and spat them out. Leo allowed himself a single glance from a distance. He caught the wolf's red eyes contemplating him, the tongue sweeping the teeth and the body crouched over a mess of rib and hunk. "Master, come here," said the wolf. Leo was resigned. "And am I next to go?" he asked simply. The wolf nodded. "Oh yes, both of us must go," he replied. "Because you seek the giant, I know. And now, strong again, I'll help you. On my back, sir, let's leave this place." So off they went. Into the night and the morning. Until the wolf brought them to a strange garden which was full of statues. Stone men, stone women, stone soldiers, and Leo slipped from the wolf's back, and he examined the statues. They were lifelike. So lifelike that he felt a warm sun might thaw them into being. He passed the bent figure of an old woman, ivy in her stone dresses.
Then he came to a statue of a brave young warrior with his sword drawn and his shield raised. Leo walked round to face it. This is my brother. This is a statue of my brother. But the wolf shook his grey head. No, my lord, no statue. This is the giant's work. There is his house, he continued, nodding towards a clearing. If you approach it, he can turn you to stone. A little way down, the prince came across another figure, frozen in the act of straining at a longbow with an arrow poised at the ear. It was his next brother.
Oh, you too? Cried Leo in despair. You too?
At the end of the clearing was the place where the giant lived, a strange building made up by tearing up a village and squashing it into a single house. Inside, that heartless giant was asleep. But a rat-a-tat-tat interrupted his dreams, a rat-a-tat-tat over and over, and he heaved that huge frame to the patchwork of windows and looked out. Standing there, fearless, no weapon, but beating a child's drum, was that young prince, Leo. The giant opened his door, and the prince explained that it had been discovered that he had helped the giant escape. The giant laughed and laughed, and had Leo seen his brothers, those stone men in the garden? Leo said he had. Anyone who crossed him would get the same treatment. So Leo had better be on his mettle, but the giant would take him in as a servant. A prince as his servant. And he picked up the drum between his fingers and tapped out that march rhythm with his memories flooding back. That terrible cage, he sighed. I had to fool you to get the keys, otherwise I'd still be there rotting. I still limp, you know. But then he squeezed Leo affectionately in his palm. So, little Leo, back again. Ha! Yes, stay if you like. No tricks, no traps. Or you'll end up as your brothers. No tricks, no traps, agreed the boy. And he went inside. Leo became the servant of the heartless giant, and for weeks he cleaned. And for weeks he scoured until every spick and span place was spick and span where previously there was only squalor. Every evening the giant returned from his wild outings and lit up his cigar and found a fire was lit, a hearth was swept and his trousers were pressed. He liked it. Very nice, he'd say as he slurped and slopped his stew. I should have had a servant before. I like it, he burped. Having a servant befits a giant. Leo would bow and clear the plates away. He was always silent. He was always polite. He was always cleaning. And always watching. And the giant, suddenly one day, croaked a cracked laugh. And I don't treat you too badly, do I? For a heartless giant. Leo kept walking away, carrying the dishes. He spoke without looking back. His words were just light and curious. What happened to your heart? Black clouds furrowed the giant's brow. It's in safe keeping, he growled. Leo kept walking. The giant continued, suddenly swelling and thumping the place where his heart should have been. Can't feel without it, can I? Can't get hurt. Can't die from a broken heart if I haven't got one. I'm invincible, he guffawed. Leo shrugged, impressed. Clever, he said casually. So where is it then, your heart? Wasps streamed from the giant's mouth. He who pries is prone to die, he warned. Do you follow me?
Yes,
Leo walked into the kitchen. And then the giant called after him. But I'll tell you if you want to know. My heart's in the cupboard. Leo was passing a huge laundry press with old wooden doors bleached and scarred with age. He paused for an instant, felt his own heart pounding. There! Pounded his heart. His heart's in there! The heartless giant crouching at the table missed nothing. He smirked. He belched. And he slumped into an after-dinner snore. Next morning, the giant stalked off early as ever. His prison years had made him fearful of walls. Out he went, all daylight hours, roving, raging, rampaging. Leo stood at the window, watching him limp and lumber away, and then he rushed to the linen press and heaved on the doors. Inside was a riot of this and that, a tusk, a trowel, a tent, a trap, a towel, a tin, 1,000 trinkets, and boxes, all manner of boxes. Leo opened them all, big and small. Two were heart-shaped. He tore at them, but there was no heart. Anything but hearts.
I'm back, announced the giant later that evening, tossing a brace of dead pigs onto a kitchen step.
He sniffed the air, a suspicious sniff.
What's that smell?
He demanded, his nose tilted up, snorting like a bellows. Leo pointed at the gleaming doors of the old cupboard. Polish, he said. The giant's yellow eyes widened in disbelief.
What are you polishing the cupboard for? He demanded.
It's the home of your heart, declared Leo. It should be polished. The giant roared with laughter.
Huh, you really think I kept my heart in a cupboard? Ah!
Leo just feigned a look of disappointment, then went to the first pig and heaved it up onto his shoulders to carry it into the pantry. It was still warm.
If you want to know, the giant called after him. My heart is under the step.
Right, said Leo, treading on the stone step and continuing.
Yes, that old step, chortled the giant. That's where my heart beats, tick-tock.
Next morning, same story. Off stomps the giant, out goes the prince. Pick and shovel, hack and hew, digging out the step, spooning out the earth. Stone, dust, roots. Heart? No. No heart.
Ah, poor Leo.
He sinks down onto the step, feet in the mounds of earth, and he despairs. From where he sits, he could see those grim silhouettes of his brothers and their fellow sufferers, waiting for him to make amends.
I'm back, calls the giant later in the evening. Throws down a sack, splits it, revealing hares and hens and ducks, and every kind of small bird, all strangled.
He limps into the house, and the giant looks down to see a map of his journey recorded in huge red footprints.
What's that?
He demands as Leo appeared. Oh, you must have trodden on the step, sir, replied Leo politely. I've painted it.
The giant scowls. What did you paint that old step for?
Because it covers your heart and should be special.
Leo bows. What?
Guffaws the giant.
You're a duffelbox. You'd believe anything.
Yes, admits Leo, I suppose I am, sir. I mean, I fetched you the keys to the dungeon thinking I could trust you, didn't I? So, yes. The giant didn't know how to take this. He didn't know if he should feel flattered or insulted. So he sat in his chair and he offers his smudged boots for Leo to remove.
Oh, the fact is, nobody can find my heart, he declared proudly. If I told you even where it was, you'd still not find it.
Leo didn't look up. He continued unwinding and unwinding the bootlaces. The giant unleashed a torrent of directions in one single breath.
Far away. So far you couldn't fathom it. So high you couldn't climb it. Is a mountain, and in the mountain is a lake. And the lake is an island, and the island is a church. In the church is a well, and in the well is a duck. And in the duck is an egg, and in the egg is my heart.
The giant poked Leo with a giant finger. Bowls him over and over on the flagstones.
So not so easy, eh, little thief? He declares. Not such a diddle and a doddle as you thought, is it? Nah. Your father tricked me once. I shan't be tricked again.
So, that night, the giant sleeps, and Leo lays on his little bed, staring at the ceiling. An egg in a duck, in a well, in a church, in an island, in a lake, in a mountain. Oh, impossible, impossible, he thought, as he steals from the house to begin the journey. Impossible, he thinks as he passes his brother. It's impossible, as he glances at the moon and he sees there silhouetted in the silver his friend the wolf, raising his head to the wind and howling loud and long. And then his friend turns towards him. In a second they're reunited and Leo explains everything. He knew where the giant's heart was. He knew how to get there. But the journey is hard, treacherous, impossible. Hold tight, said Greylegs. He offers the prince his back. Hold fast, and very tight that young prince holds, and very fast, because a grey dash they go, headlong, a blur of the world flashing by, and they come to a mountain, clambering and scampering, and then at last, they come to a lake, wide and deep. Hold tight, the wolf cries again. Hold close. They plunge. They splash into a lake. Their heads are arched up above the water, cold, soaking, chilled and choking. Out at last and onto an island. In its centre looms a church, a spire so high it threatens to tear the heavens apart, and Leo twists iron handles on massive doors. But the doors are locked, and nothing would budge them. Leo hammers in frustration on thick oak panels. And above them bells ring for the Angelus. They look up at the swing and the toll. Look, cries Greylegs, squinting into the glare. Leo sees dangling impossibly high from the bell tower the key, and then mingling with a cling, clang, 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 clang of bells comes a new note. Caw, it sounds. Caw, and from nowhere, the bird whose wing Leo has mended swoops past them in salute and swings up to that tower with a single beat and pulls off the key from its thread. Seconds later, doors swing open, and there in one corner they come upon a well, and in a well swims a duck. Leo clambers up onto the lip of the well and begins to scatter bread to tempt the duck towards open hands. He coaxes the duck with each crumb nearer and nearer until, with a sudden lunge, he has that bird firmly in his grasp. But just then, just as he pulls the duck out of the water, the egg drops from its body back into the water and sinks into the blackness. Leo is dumbfounded. But then, miraculously, the water's skin breaks, and a beautiful fish leaps, twists, turns and plunges, and disappears, reappearing, slapping the water with its tail. The salmon, back it dives, vanishes, surfaces, and flips the egg high into the air. Catch it, howls Greylegs at Leo, and he does. He catches the giant's heart. And he holds it in his hand. Later, and for the second time, the heartless giant wakes to the sound of a drum playing. Rat-a-tat-tat, rat-a-tat-tat, where have you been? He barks in a cracked roar as he charges from the house towards Leo. I've a good mind to set you there with your brothers. Leo ignores him and continues a little roll on his drum. Rat-a-tat-tat, rat-a-tat-tat. The giant boils. Stop that, he orders. Leo didn't stop, but he speaks as he continues to beat on the drum. Years ago, sir, you broke my heart, he says in a quiet voice. But now I shall break yours. And with that, he laid down his drum and he holds aloft the egg which holds the giant's heart. Terror creeps into that giant's eyes. He's terrified, paralyzed.
No!
He whispers suddenly. Don't, be careful. Don't break that, please, I beg you. Leo stands before him, the egg pressed threateningly between his palms. I will break it, he promises. I'll squeeze it and squeeze it to bits unless you release my brothers and these poor people.
Anything, anything, don't drop it. Careful, please, please be careful.
The giant seems to shrink with each second. His voice disintegrates into a sorry broken chord. I'll do anything you ask, he promises, staggering towards the stone figures. Look, look, I'm doing it. With that, he limps from statue to statue. He touches each one, mumbles a while. And as he passes, each pose melts, softens and shudders into life. And Leo's brothers run to him, praising heaven and embracing him.
Brother, you've rescued us, they cried.
The giant limps towards the three brothers.
I've done as you bid, he whispers. Can I have my heart?
Leo nods. You can, sir, as I promised, for I know that with your heart in place, you would not be as you are now. The giant sighs. Thank you, he said, holding out his hand for the return of his heart. Leo's brothers, though, lunge at him, trap his arms and snatch the egg from his grasp, and Leo yells and the giant groans. Now, villain, the brothers cried. For 5 long years we've stood here helpless and watched your cruelty. Leo protests and struggles. The giant hangs his head and closes his yellow eyes.
Please, he asks sadly. Don't, please.
But by now, liberated souls surround the group, demanding vengeance. Kill him, they chanted. Kill him! Don't, Leo pleaded. I promised. Don't. But nobody heard him. The eldest brother advances on the giant and squeezes on the egg. The giant staggers back, clutches the place where his heart should have been, gasping for air, short, agonized gasps. The crowd roars its approval, but Leo weeps, screaming to be heard over the cheering. His brother squeezes again as he sinks slowly to his knees. The giant catches Leo in a terrible, terrible gaze.
You promised, he said. You promised.
And the egg, it bursts in the elder prince's hands, with yolk and white slopping on him. The crowd cheers. The giant slumps forward and dies, and wasps swarm angrily from his mouth. And where the giant fell, a hill grew. And in time, when much was forgotten, and when many kings had come and gone, the place was still known as the Hill of the Giant. Prince Leo, he lived to be a great old age, and one day he even became king, had grandchildren and told them the tale. But if he was telling the tale, the giant gets his heart back, says sorry and make amends for his wrongs. Because you see, for Leo, in spite of all that took place, a little boy once met a giant, and they were friends. The end. I almost wish I'd told Leo's story, actually. It's funny, I like that story, but it kind of makes me sad. It's my birthday today. I'm doing a story on my birthday. I've reached a decade, I'm not going to tell you which one, but... Whew, one too many, I think. Could have done with knocking 10 years off. But there we are. I do always appreciate you listening. It's really kind of you to join me. It'd be even kinder if you'd pop a review up for me on iTunes, because it boosts me up the rankings and everything. And it's very much appreciated that. So if you can spend 5 minutes and do me a review on iTunes, and if you're enjoying the stories... Lovely to have you on board. God bless. Take care. See you soon.